helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichart, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichart, National Director for our Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And with me today is Ashley Chapman. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be here.
Well, before we dive into this subject, we're going to talk about human trafficking. I wanted to give our listeners and those watching a quick bio of your background. Ashley is a human rights lawyer, social entrepreneur, and believer, and these are Ashley, your words on your LinkedIn page, a believer that each of us are called and uniquely positioned to make our world a more just and equitable place and to make a difference on behalf of those in need in our communities. Ashley is founder of many different organizations, ALTUS, AFRJ, Justice U, Freedom Council, and Engage Together. Ashley graduated from, got her BS at Tennessee Technical University and graduated magna cum laude for her JD at Regent University. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about human trafficking, and I know that's kind of a big meta question, but maybe as we're diving into the subject together, why don't you explain to us what is human trafficking? This is a term we're hearing. It's in the zeitgeist right now because of the border crisis. We're hearing about human sex trafficking and all these things that are happening in real time. Explain to our audience, what is human trafficking?
Yeah, so I won't give you the legal definition. I'm not sure that's incredibly helpful. I'll give you the layman's definition. Okay. So what we're talking about when we're talking about human trafficking is the sale of human beings for three primary purposes: for forced labor, for sexual exploitation, and for organs. Mm. This is something that's impacting over 50 million souls worldwide and over 1 million souls here in the United States. So this impacts whole families, adults and children, men and women, foreign nationals and citizens of any and really every country. It has grown by 25% in the last 5 years alone and just continues to grow as our world and our communities struggle with unrest and also knowing what to do to care well for people who are at risk. And so it creates quite a playground of opportunity for traffickers to come in and exploit people that we no longer see in our countries or communities.
What's driving this? I imagine there's a lot of driving factors, but what are some of the things that are driving this? Why is this happening at the scale that it is?
Yeah, it's a great question, and the answer is nuanced. Mm. So labor trafficking, what drives labor trafficking is the desire of people to purchase cheap goods, right? Mm. So the desire for cheap goods fast tends to create a market opportunity worldwide for labor exploitation and trafficking. Also, people just seeking jobs and opportunities, maybe in their own country, maybe in other countries. And somewhere in that process, either at the beginning, the middle, or the end, they end up in the hands of someone who wants to exploit that need, right? Mm-hmm. And so they offer them a job, and then they turn it into a nightmare that they now own that person. So scam centers have popped up. This is one of the newest forms of trafficking all across the world, especially concentrated in Asia, where you're going to get a call in the United States for someone pretending to be in need of money or whatever it might be. And the other side of that is actually an individual who's being trafficked by a labor trafficker. So labor trafficking is complex, and it has a lot to do with people wanting to exploit others for free labor. Think old school modern slavery. Okay. Sexual exploitation is another issue, right? So the drive for that is people who want to rape others for pleasure, right? So that is every demographic, every age, everywhere in the world. And that's risen by about 400% in different forms in just the last few years because of online sexual exploitation, especially of children. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's all kinds of forms of that. So familial sex trafficking, when families have learned to sell their spouses or their children or grandchildren to feed their drug addiction usually, or something going on there, to like gang involved trafficking, to organized crime trafficking. And organ trafficking, what drives that, of course, if it's not obvious, is the need for people around the world to secure an organ that they need and they can't wait for, or don't think that they should wait for. And so they go elsewhere in the world where restrictions aren't as high. There are laws against that now. It's a felony. We call it organ tourism here in the UK and the United States. And so so different driving factors that creates demand for exploiting others in this way, but it just keeps growing.
You talk about exploiting others. I mean, there must be, are there certain population groups that are more at risk than others, and who are those?
Yeah, so I'll focus on a U.S. context right now. Okay. So my work as a human rights lawyer has taken me all around the world, but let me just focus on the United States for a second. So traffickers are looking to exploit people that our communities or our country doesn't see or doesn't know how to see, perhaps. Mm. And so your highest risk populations are those experiencing vulnerabilities and what we call compounding vulnerabilities in their life that make it difficult for them to have support systems and safety nets. So in the United States, the number one at-risk population in the United States are children who are running away from or aging out of our foster care system. Mm. That's your number one exploited population in the US. Okay. After that is gonna be individuals who've experienced, say, domestic violence and sexual assault, who often have been in the hands of other exploiters and traffickers as well. Foreign nationals, of course, and recent migrants who again, either the beginning, middle, or end of their process in their journey here, find themselves in the hands of a trafficker without the ability to ask for help. Drug endangered children, gang involved youth, justice involved individuals as well. So people that are because of some experiences they've gone through, sort of increasingly isolated from safe people and supports in their communities, provide an opportunity for a trafficker to come in and say, not come in as the big bad wolf. And this is what the movies and media will sing that song, right? So kidnappings and that level, and that does happen occasionally, but it's not the majority. The majority of the time, a trafficker in the U.S. and all around the world is looking for people who are in desperate need, and they'll first present themselves as someone who can meet that need, and then isolate that person further, and then through force, fraud, and coercion, control that person.
Yeah, it sounds like a progressive strategy to, get them more dependent, and then they become more vulnerable, and then exploited. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, obviously, our audience for this podcast are those in healthcare, students, those training. So help us understand how we bring together this issue with those in healthcare. How are those within healthcare a critical partner in this fight?
Well, Bill, I train, I feel like, almost every day of my life. And I often say, if I had to choose one person only to train, it's going to be healthcare. And the reason for that, when we're talking about how to respond to this in our local communities, the reason for that is, in the United States and other countries are showing this too, up to 90% of victims of trafficking while they're being trafficked are seeking care from local healthcare settings in the communities where they're being trafficked through, many times, not once, many times, and sometimes as many as 15 to 18 times with 10 plus concurrent healthcare conditions. So here's the only profession in local communities where victims are seeking their care, right? Victims are not raising their hand to law enforcement. They're not raising hands to their teachers. They're not shouting out across the street to a passerby, but they are having to come many times to local healthcare providers for help. And if we can get healthcare providers to train, I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
Right now, less than 1% of victims are identified while they're exploited, and yet 90% of them are seeking help from healthcare providers. And we could radically shift that identification if we got every HCP trained.
Yeah, because those healthcare providers are the ones who really are truly seeing these individuals. As you mentioned, they rely on being unseen and hidden. So they're seeing them, but they're still perhaps, is there a disconnect between the healthcare professional as they're engaging with a patient and having somebody in their office? Are they well trained? Do they have their antenna up? No, they don't. Okay. So is that the first step, is bringing greater awareness?
Bringing greater awareness, not just that trafficking issue, is happening in the world, you know what I mean? But that as a healthcare provider, here's how it's happening in my community, and here's how I'm likely to see that in my particular setting. That's training, right? Yeah. So we have got to get ACPs trained, because what they are trained to do, they are doing, right? They are treating that broken bone.
Right.
They're treating that STD. They're treating that often as a singular instance of sexual assault instead of a trafficking, story. And there's so many indicators of this and what I might call kind of red flags, right? That are both situational red flags, that if a healthcare provider saw kind of the interaction, say, between someone in their setting and the patient and this person who claims to be their friend or their parent or their spouse, if they knew the situational flags, if they knew the indicators just from a health perspective. Because here's the real challenge, Bill. Most victims of trafficking do not know they are victims of trafficking. So if you were to say, are you a trafficking victim? It might just go right over their head, because they've seen the movies too.
Okay.
And they don't know that. They don't know that construct. They know what they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So they might say, well, I was abused at home and I ended up in the foster care system. I bounced around to 12 different homes. I had enough. I ran away from that system. And I met this guy who says he's going to take care of me and give me food and shelter me and protect me. And yeah, he forces me to do things I don't want to do, but I can't find a way out. And even if I tried, he'd kill me. That's what they know. Right. So that's what they know. And so it is on us, and especially healthcare, to see what I say, kind of look beyond the surface of what you're handling in that moment and see if you can't understand what indicators are showing you. This might actually be something much bigger story than even this individual might really fully understand.
Yeah.
And then how do we interact in ways that are trauma informed to get them connected to care?
Is this something that typically healthcare professionals need to seek out this kind of training, or are there hospitals, are the medical schools, are they giving this training, are they taking the initiative, or does the professional have to take the initiative to find this kind of training themselves?
Where we are right now, I think the professional has to take the initiative. Okay. So there are some pockets of activity, right? Some hospitals, some medical schools, and we're working with a lot of those actually, who've really taken on the ownership of equipping their HCPs in this way. But right now, by and large, HCPs, by the way, are under increasing mandates to receive this training, like whether that's from state or their associations. As an attorney, for instance, I'm required to get certain trainings in the field, HCPs too. And so because human trafficking has been declared a public health crisis in this country, there are growing mandates on that. Now, just because you have a mandate, of course, doesn't mean you've got the resource. And so there are many resources to train healthcare providers. We have several, many actually, under our toolkit. There are others out there in the world. So you may have to seek it. It won't take you long to find it. Mm. You know what I mean? And then start getting equipped and sharing that knowledge with others.
I'd like to say, you know, is this training, you know, is it simple? Or it's not easy, I imagine, but is it simple in that does it require yet just a couple of strategic things that an HCP needs to do or should do that can kind of change the game a bit and make it so that they are able to intervene and help this individual? And what would those be? What would be some of those key things?
Yeah. So it is a complex issue, but I think getting equipped doesn't have to be super complex, right? Okay. We need to understand something, right? We need to understand the issue itself. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there in the world. So as a professional, a frontline professional, we need to get equipped with the truth and of the issue. We definitely need to better understand the landscape in our own community. How trafficking happens in liberal Kansas versus Nashville, Tennessee versus Miami, Florida is very different. And so we've got to understand that local landscape and get connected to people in our communities that are working that problem, like your task forces and your service providers. Then you've got to get trained to see the indicators. And I think I put those in two buckets, and I mentioned that earlier. What are the indicators and interactions I see, you know, around this person? And what are the indicators in their own health that are going to become present, you know, as I'm working to serve this person? And then what do I do? Right. So we got to get that protocol set up. So it's an issue of indicators that you're going to see, the protocol you'll follow, and the partnerships in your community that are going to enable success.
Yeah, I think those partners are really key, because at some point there's going to be a handoff that HCP has got to do something with this knowledge, this suspicion, whatever it might be. And so they need to know kind of what's next.
Yes, that's it. It's critical, right? Yeah. And we need to know that now so that when we see it, not if, but when we see it, we know what to do.
Right.
So yeah, so a big part of our work, my side of the housework is through Engage Together, we help communities build those partnerships and those protocols and those collaborations, and even assess strengths and gaps in that community so programs that don't exist can begin to exist to care well for people. And through JustSU, we train. I've trained thousands of HCPs this year, but there are so many more, right, that need that training.
Exactly.
So I'm super excited. We're working on that together today to just get the word out. There are literally millions of people who depend on it, and healthcare is so uniquely positioned to engage this issue.
Can I ask you about your own personal journey and story? How did the Lord move you in this direction? Was there a particular experience and story or something that you came to realize that kind of prompted you to think that this is a vital and worthwhile and strategic opportunity to invest your skills as a lawyer on this issue?
Yeah, well, the answer to that takes me back to my childhood. So I had really felt convicted one night when I was 11 that God was waking me up every day, and I was not asking him what to do with that day. I was just living for me, right? And so I felt, I told the Lord, I will not do that anymore. I will get up every day and ask you what you want me to do with that day and try to do it. Well, about 2 weeks later, my parents took in three children into our home in an emergency situation that had experienced this level of trauma in their lives. And it was so overwhelming. I mean, just the trauma they had experienced and we had a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and 8-year-old in our care all of a sudden who had gone through every form of horrific abuse you can imagine. And then I was seeing my parents fight this broken system in our community between the foster care system, judicial system, and all of this. I had also made a commitment to read the Bible through, you know, at that time. So I was reading God's word through and just seeing his heart for the oppressed, vulnerable. Now, 6 months later, the outcome was good. The three children were removed completely from the situation and adopted all together by a couple in our church. And I went to my parents and said, I think I'm meant to spend my whole life trying to fix this. And I think I'm going to need a law degree to do it. So that's been the only thing I have focused on, sir, every day since. It was a long time ago, but it's been 24 years professionally.
Well, thankfully you were obedient to his voice and his calling and being faithful to that. There is light, but there's not a lot of light in this subject, in this issue with trafficking. How do you as a Christ follower stay encouraged and motivated to continue to press ahead? Because I imagine this is, it must be like, you know, pushing against the wind. There's just so much that's happening. And I know you're not just one person. I know there's so many like you that are involved in this fight. But how do you get up every morning and say, Lord, I'm ready to face this issue yet once again?
I think my answer to that is we're called to be light in this world. And the fact that we're called to be light means there are great darknesses, you know what I mean, that need that light, right? Yeah. So we're not called to be light in a light, you know what I mean, world. We're called to be light in a dark world and to take that light and light others, you know what I mean? You're right. I mean, I have the joy of working in the past decade with tens of thousands of others, you know what I mean, who are out there in this fight and from law enforcement to healthcare to everyone in between and doing all we can and everything we can to help those who are in these types of desperate situations and prevent them from ever happening if possible. And on my very worst day, my very worst day where I can get wrecked and just so saddened and sorrowful and even, you know, just overwhelmed with the things that I wouldn't even speak about. You know, I mean, they're just unspeakable things that I've had to see and deal with in our work. It's nothing compared to the people we're fighting for. And I know God's heart for those, every soul. And so I'll get up every day and I'll go till God calls me home or we resolve it. You know what I mean? So, but till we do, you know what I mean? Like I find joy in staying focused on the solution and driving towards that solution. And whether it's a program or a community or a new technology we're building or the people we're bringing to the table and not staying so focused on the darkness. I will tell you, I got way overwhelmed about a decade ago in this work. And I just felt God say to me, you're going to have to focus on something light every day because you could lose yourself. You can lose yourself. You know what I mean? And so taking a walk with my dog, making some cookies, you know what I mean? Just taking time to spend time, not 100% focused each day, even if it's for a minute, is also what keeps me going forward.
Oh, that's good. That's a good word. Yeah. It's, Abraham Kuyper, he talked about the lordship over every sphere of life. And so this is the ability for you to bring Christ to bear on this issue. Of course, you know, our Lord is one of justice and seeks justice. And so this is such a valuable kingdom work and at the very heart of God. So I'm encouraged that you and others like you are engaged in this fight and the tenacity that you bring to it. And appreciate that. Well, how can somebody listening, likely a student perhaps, What can they do now? They may feel like, well, they're learning something, but then is there some action steps that they may be able to take?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so much. I mean, there's just so much is my answer to that. So, but some quick ideas, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Firstly, let's make sure that you as a student understand this yourself. I mean, so many young people have experienced this in our country. Many of people who came from just fine backgrounds, but found themselves in vulnerable situations that got exploited. So make sure you know how to keep yourself safe and your friends safe. Mm-hmm. Take time to learn about this issue. We've got a free 1-hour course where you can go and take a look at what's going on in the United States, especially, and what are those risk factors and how are traffickers, you know, exploiting people and know how to stay safe and how to see. Right. So know how to keep your eyes open in your communities, just as you're out and about as a citizen, but certainly as a student in the healthcare world, you're going to have opportunities, I imagine, even now to work in walk-in clinics and emergency rooms and women's health clinics and pediatricians offices. And all of these are settings where people are walking in need and maybe in greater need than you imagine. And so knowing those indicators and getting equipped even now, and if you're in a setting, serving in a setting, asking, do they have a protocol to address human trafficking? Mm. And what is that? They may not. And that might be their prompt to start to know. But then I think as a student, you've got a lot of fellow students who are warriors on this too. And I would encourage you to, beyond getting equipped yourself and making sure as a professional you're getting equipped and the settings you're working in are equipped, think about the needs in your community. And so start to get to know your neighbors, like who's working on this issue in your backyard.
Right.
And go and just ask, what do they need? I promise you they can list on less than two fingers the number of people who've called them this year and asked that question. So just go and say, what do you need? And could our student club rally those needs? Can we get those gift cards for law enforcement so they can take the girls they rescue for dinner, you know what I mean, on their way to the shelter or to get them clothed at Walmart before, you know, children who are taking into a forensic examination, you should know, even their clothes might be evidence. So how do we create care bags for kiddos who are going through this? I mean, there's just so many tangible ways to be a blessing in your local community. So get equipped, share that knowledge, find ways to plug in and meet needs in your local community. I've got many more ideas than that, but that's a good start, I guess.
Well, that is a good start. We'll want to put the training you mentioned on the website and our show notes. Mm-hmm. And any other resources you think would be helpful to point our students towards, in particular, beside the ones you just mentioned?
Yeah. So January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month in this country. Yes. And so there are going to be a lot of things out there, you know, where Blue Day is January 11th. And this is where the whole country and all our federal agencies and state proclamations come out. So there are going to be lots of ways for you to get engaged, maybe even on your campuses, but just with one collective voice to say, we care and we're going to get engaged. There's our human trafficking awareness badge, a 1-hour course free that you can take on your phone, tablet, device, whatever you want, 5-minute chunks, the whole hour if you like. And that's going to equip you with the knowledge you need to see this in your local community and really understand what's happening, especially in the U.S. So really encourage you to go earn that badge. And then if you're saying, hey, I've asked around and we don't have a protocol or we don't have training resources where I am, then just knock on our door. If you go to engagetogether.com, knock on our door, and I promise you, one of our team members will be back in touch really soon to get you what you need and connected to resources.
That's great. Great. And we'll, again, put all that in the show notes. Also, I'd include in the show notes, you know, CMDA, we have resources and tools available on our site, too. We'll make put a link there as well. Wow. I know we've just, you know, just dealt with the tip of the iceberg here. There's so much more we could have talked about, certainly about the indicators for trafficking and so much more. A lot of that, I'm sure, finds its way into the training.
It does.
Ashley, thank you so much for the work you're doing. Not only, you know, you're deep into it, you're rolling up your sleeves, but you're also an advocate and being able to kind of share with others this issue that will only thrive because it's in the darkness, and bringing the light to it is one of the first steps. And then, of course, getting our Christian HCPs involved to be advocates, to be frontline workers, to be able to stand in the gap is such a key thing too. So thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, and I know it can be an overwhelming issue, right? Mm-hmm. But here's what I like to say about that.
Okay.
There's a world of need.
Yes.
Which means there's a world of opportunity. So whoever's listening into this, there is an opportunity for you to engage in ways that will be meaningful, impactful, and will make a difference. So don't shy away and go, my gosh, I think we shy away because we feel incapable of making an impact, and this is not that kind of issue. So whether you're wrapping around kids who are in your foster care system in your local community, whether you're helping that woman who's exiting a domestic violence situation, you're just helping that mom who doesn't have childcare for, you know, because she's a single mom and has to do a night job. These are things that are preventive too, and making sure that person is not exploited. So there's so much here that you can do to help. Just find ways to get involved and just get it done. Yeah, let's be that light in that great darkness.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's a great way to end our conversation. Thank you so much, Ashley. And thank you all for joining us for this episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. We'll see you next time. Well, it's this time of the podcast where we tell you some things you need to know. As always, you can find CMDA Student Life on all of our social media properties using the handle and username CMDA Student Life. And you'll find us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, X. And if you go to cmdastudentlife.org, you'll find a section in there for show notes. And so you'll be able to get all the important links that we discussed in this episode show. Also, we want to draw your attention to CMDA's premier event, and that is our national convention. In 2025, May 1st through the 5th, our CMDA National Convention will be taking place right outside of St. Louis, Missouri, in St. Charles at the Convention Center. It's a great location. And as a student, I want to call your attention to some opportunities we have just for you. So if you go to natcon.cmda.org, you'll go right there to our National Convention landing page. But at the very top, there's a button for students and residents. Go ahead and click that, because information will be there for scholarships, transportation, ride sharing, hotels, and all that information will be there just for students, as well as information about our VIE poster session. So anything student or trainee related is going to be there on the site. But in particular, I want to call your attention to scholarship money, because we know finances can be tight. We know they are, but there is a generosity of spirit in CMDA. And so we've been able to raise scholarship money that's going to help underwrite not only your registration costs, but potentially some of your transportation and housing costs. So again, check it all out at natcon.cmda.org. And we're hoping and praying for about 220 students from all around the country to join us there in St. Charles. So it's going to be an incredible event, an event that you don't want to miss. Well, thank you again for joining us for this episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse Podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.